Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Reviving Vet Med. In today's episode, we will be talking about uncovering unconscious bias. Unconscious bias is bias that is present but not consciously recognized. This is a really fascinating phenomenon that we're hearing a lot more about in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement and other initiatives to improve diversity and inclusion, especially in the veterinary workplace. In today's episode, we will talk through the neuroscience behind unconscious bias. We'll talk about three misconceptions when it comes to our unconscious bias. And we will also talk about the different ways that unconscious bias impacts veterinary medicine. Most importantly, how we can challenge or dismantle our unconscious biases. Really looking forward to sharing this information with you today. And just so you know, this information was shared during a live video session. If the audio sounds a bit off, or if I'm interacting with people who are attending that session, that is the reason why. And again, without further delay, let's go ahead and get started. This is the Reviving Vet Med podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Marie Holloway-Chuck. And my mission is to improve the mental health and well-being of veterinary professionals around the world. Unconscious bias, by way of definition, according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, is a bias or a prejudice that is present but not consciously held or recognized. So this is sort of the what's going on in our unconscious mind that we are often not even aware of and that is steering us towards engaging in certain behaviors or making certain decisions. And so I want to get into the nitty-gritty of why this happens. And I talk a lot about neuroscience when I talk about meditation and mindfulness and other aspects of mental health that I've shared. But, you know, our brain is a fascinating organ. And this is news to me, but the amount of stimuli that we are exposed to on a regular basis is astronomical. And this is stimuli coming in through all of our senses. So what we're seeing, what we're hearing, what we're touching, what we're smelling, etc. And of course, this way exceeds the conscious mind's ability to process all of these stimuli. So I don't know how they figured out this number, but apparently we're exposed to 11 billion pieces of information per second. And our brain can only consciously capture about 50 and really only process about 10, or some people even say 7 pieces of information per second. So if you can imagine, you know, our brain has had to evolve so that we're not limited to those 7 to 10 pieces of information that we can actually process in order to keep ourselves safe. So the brain has found ways to take shortcuts so that we can process as much information from our surroundings as possible and make decisions. Do we need to run? Do we need to hide? Do we need to go after something? And so yay for our brains and all of the work that they do. But that unfortunately has resulted in our unconscious bias. And so what does that mean? Well, our brain is able to efficiently sort through all of that information that it receives, and it does this to allow us to make these quick judgments and assessments of people and situations. And again, this is evolutionary. So this is what has allowed us to determine what situations are safe versus unsafe and to gauge threats or dangers. If we didn't have this capability with our brain, we wouldn't have survived to this day and age. So what influences that decision making? How is the brain deciding what's safe and what isn't safe? Well, there are tons of influences that allow the brain to sort this information. And these include, but are not limited to, our religion, our race, our gender, how much money we have in terms of our financial security, what's our family status, are we a parent or not, our ethnicity, how were we brought up, was it a safe environment or not, what is our age, what is our relationship status? What is our sexual orientation and education? There's so many different factors that play a role that influence the brain's decisions subconsciously about what is safe versus unsafe for us when we're making these quick decisions. So again, going a little bit deeper into the neuroscience of this, this all comes down to our limbic system. So our limbic system is one of the least the least developed parts of our brain. And we needed the limbic system during our evolution so that it could keep us safe and it could keep us safe from threats. So the limbic system is really, when we think of the hand-brain model, this is the most primitive part of our brain that has really developed to determine, is this a threat? Is it not? Do I need to react? Do I need to run? What is my fight or flight response? And the limbic system is the one that's making these decisions. And there's just simply not enough time to engage the prefrontal cortex. So the prefrontal cortex, which is the most developed part of our brain, that's our higher reasoning center. That's where we can analyze and look at situations and question our behaviors and solve problems. Again, when we're filtering, you know, these billions of pieces of information that are coming at us every second of the day, we don't have time to sit there and process, you know, is this person safe or do I need to pull my hand away from this hot stove? That's just going to happen instantaneously. And the three pieces of information that help the limbic system to make these decisions are social conditioning, or a sense of what is like us and what is not like us. Our memories. So we learn from our memories and past experiences what is a safe situation versus what is not a safe situation. When have I been hurt in the past? Which carves out or basically sets a tone for when I could get hurt again in the future. And then our personal values. So what's important to us is also going to affect it. So those factors all play a role in the limbic system's fast unconscious processing and sorting of information. So I want to talk a little bit more about our value system and where this plays a role. So our values are really our ideals. These are the things that are most important to us on a personal and professional level. We basically tap into our values when we gauge our behaviors as being good or bad, or the behaviors of others as being good or bad. And it's not so much good or bad in the traditional sense, but more so, how do I feel about that in the context of what is really important to me? So values can be taught, they can develop over time, they can be learned, and they can also be unlearned. And they change really depending on the stage of life that we are in. But basically, values are what give us an understanding and context about our ideal state of being. And they also determine how we understand things, how we make sense of the world. So there's actually a phrase called sense making, making sense of the things around us. That ultimately comes from our value system. So how does all of this underlying information and neuroscience and brain development feed into our unconscious bias? So again, unconscious bias is bias that happens automatically and is outside of our control. It is unconscious. It is not within our conscious awareness. We don't even recognize in the moment that it's happening. And that unconscious bias is influenced by all of those things I mentioned: our background, our cultural environment, our personal experiences, our value systems, our memories, etc. There's so many different things that feed into our unconscious bias. So I want to dig deeper into our unconscious bias and what it all means for us, not only as veterinary professionals, but as human beings. And I'm going to start by talking about three misconceptions about unconscious bias. So the first misconception is, well, I don't have any unconscious biases. I'm a self-aware person. I pretty much know, you know, what's important to me, what's not, and what's, you know, what's threats and what isn't, and there isn't anything going on underneath that I'm not aware of. Well, that might be what you think, but I can tell you that it's not true, because every single person has unconscious biases. This is whether you want to admit it or not. And this is really regardless of where you come from, what your role is, what your race is, gender, ethnicity, etc. It doesn't matter. Again, in the context of the world we live in today, when we talk about privilege and so on, this isn't just a white person thing. Everyone has unconscious bias. And I want to be clear here, unconscious bias isn't inherently bad, but it does exist. It's existed and evolved for a reason, right? In order to keep us safe. But it's time that we take a step back and we look at our unconscious bias and we ask us if this is potentially having a negative impact on our life and whether some of our unconscious biases need to be looked at and perhaps unlearned. So the second myth about unconscious bias, well, I know what my unconscious biases are, so technically then they're not really unconscious. Well, yes, you may recognize some of your biases. I absolutely have spent time over the years, especially when I was in academia and it came to grading students or, you know, reading grant proposals, I have had to look at some of my biases. And I recognize as well in doing that, that there are many other biases that still remain in my blind spots. Again, many of us have dozens of unconscious biases, so you might be aware of a few of them, but there are probably some still there. And you might actually be surprised at what unconscious biases you have, because we can actually have unconscious biases that go against our values or our conscious beliefs, or even against our own group. So I'll share by example. I, of course, am female, and you would think as a female academician that I would have a gender bias favoring female students. But in fact, when I really looked at how I was assessing students when I was in academia, for example, if we would have four female students on the ICU rotation and one male student, I had to be very mindful about not holding those female students to a higher standard. Well, you know, they're female students and I expect more of them. You know, they're smarter and this, that, and the other. Sorry to the men who may be watching or listening. But you get my point. This was something that, well, who would think that I would have a bias against female students, or it's not really against them, but it's a bias to hold them to a certain standard or consider them a certain way. But that was indeed what was happening. And so again, you might be surprised at what biases you have. And the third myth, that some unconscious bias is unconscious, or pardon me, since unconscious bias is unconscious, well, there's nothing I can do about it. So why are we even talking about this? Well, believe it or not, research suggests that you can change your unconscious biases. But first, you have to accept that you have them, and then you have to take steps to intentionally dismantle them, but it can be done. So for those of you who are looking for additional resources on unconscious bias, I highly, highly recommend a video that I watched on YouTube not too long ago, How to Outsmart Your Unconscious Bias, and I'll share a link to this in the episode's notes. This was a fascinating video, and this is honestly my first time really recognizing my unconscious bias. And again, I am a very open-minded, non-judgmental, people-loving, kind individual, if I don't say so myself. My friends can vouch for this, hopefully. But, you know, the speaker took us through some examples where, you know, we closed our eyes and we visualized, and I don't want to give it all away, but essentially she gave us three scenarios to visualize. So visualize that you walk into a big, you know, Fortune 500 company and you're being introduced to the CEO. And what does that CEO look like? And the second scenario was, you know, you're out for dinner with a friend and you look over at the table next to you and there's a couple celebrating their 40th wedding anniversary. And you know, you just imagine that in your mind. And then the third scenario is that you are out and about and you see a young couple with a newborn baby. And so she basically says, you know, like, okay, so let's rewind and I want to hear what you saw. And of course, for many of us, what we saw was an old white male for the Fortune 500 CEO, an old white heterosexual couple for the couple celebrating their 40th anniversary. This is for me. I'm not going to say this is what you saw, but many of us, these were the examples even that she shared. And then for the couple, again, a young, white, heterosexual couple with a white baby. So it was so fascinating. And you know, I was like, oh my gosh, that is what I saw. And she called it. And I do have biases. And when we did the exercise again later on, after we'd had the chance to really talk about what does this mean, where does this come from, et cetera, I was able to picture, you know, a homosexual male couple celebrating their 40th anniversary, and you know, mixed race couple, or myself. I'm a single mom by choice, and I have a baby. You know, there's all sorts of scenarios that we can see, but it's our biases that lead us to jump to certain conclusions. Fascinating video. So what does this mean for veterinary medicine? Of course, I always like to put everything in the context of our profession. So this impacts us when it comes to recruitment. Who do we hire? Again, think of unconscious biases as biases towards people who are like you. So very often when we are hiring, we're looking for people like us, who we feel like belong in our group and who we feel comfortable with. Same thing happens for veterinary school admissions or technician school admissions. Again, I go back to my example before about evaluations. How are we assessing students and employees? Are we holding them to different standards based on who they are and how they appear? How do we resolve workplace conflict or mediate disagreements? Again, are we holding some people to different standards, or are we, what's the word I'm looking for? Reprimanding certain individuals and not others. Same thing with recognition. Who are we awarding or promoting around us? And then, of course, with our clients, we have biases about our clients, and I see this all the time. It's like, you know, so-and-so rolls up in his three-piece suit and his, you know, fancy car, and we're automatically thinking, well, gosh, he must have a lot of money, and therefore he's going to spend lots of money on his dog, because very often we equate money with that, you know, bond and that ability to care. But as all of us know, when we really sit and look at that bias, you don't have to have a lot of money to really love your pet and want to care for them. So again, recognizing these biases. Oh, you're so welcome. Yes. Thank you, Rebecca. Says it's all fascinating, and thanks for putting it into words. And yes, all that. I'm so glad that you agree, Rebecca. It's, you know, when you take the time to kind of sit and look at it all together, it definitely starts to make sense. And I think it's really important to look at. Okay, so we'll keep going here. Ah, this is a really great video that I want to draw all of your attention to. Again, I'll link to it in the comment section and in the episode notes as well. This is a video that came out last summer, and it's called A Profession in Crisis, Discrimination in Vet Medicine. And it's a wee bit off topic for this, for our presentation, but if you have not seen this video, I do want to draw your attention to it. And for the simple fact of what's on this screenshot, veterinary medicine is the least racially and ethnically diverse profession in the United States today. If you look at who's working in the vet profession and you look at who's living in, you know, the United States and Canada, the two do not reflect each other from a racially and ethnically diverse standpoint. And why is that? Is that about who we're admitting into school? Is that about who we are hiring in our practices? And is that related to our unconscious bias? So please take a watch of that video if you haven't already. So more importantly then, Debbie Boone raises a point. I suggest people take the Harvard bias tests. And yes, Paul shares, do you have a link to that? Debbie, if you have to, if you can put a link to that in the comment section, that would be great. And then I can also share a link to that in the notes and comments for everyone as well. I had not heard of that, but it doesn't surprise me, of course, that Harvard would come up with something like that. They have so many great resources when it comes to workplace issues such as these. Okay, so I want to talk about challenging biases. So how do we challenge our unconscious biases? So challenging biases, and I'm going to break each of these down, requires an awareness, empathy, exposure to other groups, positive stereotype imagery, micro affirmations, and additional training opportunities. So that was a perfect segue into the Harvard bias test that Debbie brings up, having an awareness. Are you aware of your unconscious biases? Can you recognize them and understand that there are many, many different types? And I'm going to talk you through a few of them right now. So the one of them is, and probably the most in, the most common bias that we see from an unconscious bias standpoint is affinity bias. This is also called a similarity bias. This is our tendency to want to connect with others who are like us. They share interests or experiences or backgrounds. There's also confirmation bias. Many of you have heard of this already, especially those of you who do research or, you know, you do a lot of, you know, thinking and reasoning. Confirmation bias is when we have an inclination to draw conclusions about a situation or a person based on what we want to be true, what we already believe to be true, or prejudices rather than merit. So we have an idea in our head and we believe it to be true. And so we're almost looking for evidence to prove that it's true rather than considering that it might not be true. Then there's attribution bias, making sense of or judging a person's behavior based on prior observations or interactions. So maybe you met somebody, you didn't have a great first impression. This could be a client or a coworker. And now you're just like, I don't like that person. They're not a good person. I don't want to be around them. I don't want to work with them. I don't want them to be my client. You attribute it all to a prior observation that you saw or an interaction that you had. Then there's conformity bias, otherwise known as peer pressure, where it's the tendency to act similar to the people that we are around, regardless of our own personal beliefs. So this is where groupthink happens. This is why it's so important when you are having a discussion about somebody that you're going to hire or a student that you're evaluating or whatever it might be, that you take the time to gather your thoughts, maybe even write them down, like who's the candidate that you would choose, before you actually share them. Because it can be very easy to hear, and I absolutely recognize this in the work that I've done, where somebody says, yeah, I really like, you know, Debbie, I think she would be a great person to add to our team. And so then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, Debbie, let's go with her. And maybe Debbie was second on your list and you were going to go with Josh first. Again, whatever it is, making sure that you're not being swayed by the group that you're in. Then there's the halo versus horns effect. So the halo effect creates a bias where we tend to place a person on a pedestal after learning something impressive about them. Wow, they won such and such award. Like, they must be an amazing person. And we just are fixated on that rather than getting the whole picture. The horns effect is the opposite, where we view a person negatively after learning something unpleasant about them. So again, just random example, but maybe we learned that, somebody was let go from their last job and we're like, oh, they must be awful. We don't want to hire them. Well, were they let go because of cutbacks or restructuring or was there new management or ownership? You know, again, going deeper into that bias versus just jumping to the conclusion of getting let go means that they're, you know, not somebody that we want to work with. Other common unconscious biases that I probably don't have to explain much about: gender bias, I alluded to previously, ageism, very, very common to have, you know, underlying biases, you know, and it could be someone older than you, like, oh, that old vet, you know, gosh, they're living in the dark ages and they're not keeping up with medicine, or, oh, those millennial newbies, you know, they just don't care. All they care about now is work-life balance and they don't want to be a team player. You know, these are biases. Some of these may be more conscious than unconscious, but nevertheless related to age. There's name bias, where we have certain affiliations for people with certain types of names, names that we recognize. I'm sure that many of you have come across a name on a resume or, you know, on an email or something, and you're like, oh, what kind of a name is that? What's their ethnicity? You know, whatever. And you're kind of, your brain is already filtering through all of that in your unconscious mind to decide, you know, is this a person that's like me or not like me? And what would it be like to interact with them? Beauty bias is the bias typically held towards the belief that people who are attractive are, you know, better, more intelligent, more successful, etc. Similarly, people who are very tall or very short, there's typically biases against them as well. Nonverbal bias. So this is, you know, when I think of nonverbal bias, I think of, you know, you shake someone's hand and they give you that really kind of limp, soft handshake and you think, ugh, you know, like this is, I don't want to work with somebody with a limp handshake. And, you know, again, maybe they have bad rheumatoid arthritis and they can't shake, they don't have a good grip strength, you know, whatever it is, but we're jumping to these conclusions and we're not examining the whole picture. And then authority bias, where someone in a place of authority tells you something and you inherently believe them or hold them to a certain standard because they are in a position of authority. So those are some examples of unconscious biases. I urge you to take a look at those in the context of your own life and your own behaviors. And then once again, I will link to the quiz that Debbie has shared to examine your own biases via the quiz. Okay, so empathy can also help us to dismantle or decrease our unconscious biases. This is where we are doing perspective taking. We're imagining what would it feel like to be in this other person's shoes. How might I feel? Then we have exposure to other groups. So get uncomfortable. Spend time with people who you haven't spent time with before, people who are not in your typical peer group, and make it a learning opportunity. Seek new information. See if you can dismantle some of these assumptions that you have. Again, you're not trying to take over this situation. You're trying to be the listener. And just take the time to really value this opportunity to learn and engage with individuals who you might not normally engage with. And you can also consider leaning on somebody outside of your typical group to hold you accountable, so that if you say something that is obvious to them that it is comes from an unconscious bias, that they are given permission from you to say, hey, you know what, I think you need to take a look at that. Can be very helpful as well. Positive stereotype imagery. So this is where you can imagine alternatives to the negative stereotypes that you've held in your mind. So when you think of a particular group of individuals, do you immediately think, you know, oh, you know, untrustworthy or lazy or aggressive or whatever? Can you then picture examples in your mind of individuals in that same group where you know that's not to be true, where you know they can be kind or generous or hardworking or whatever it might be? Again, really trying to dismantle what you've ingrained in your brain. This could be using celebrities, professional athletes, or political figures as examples to help you with this. And then micro affirmations. This is where we offer small gestures of respect and inclusion. This is really, really important. The little things count. And this is another video that I highly recommend that you watch, and I will link to it once again for you. But do one small thing differently. When you have the awareness, you've had the chance to examine your unconscious biases, what is one small thing that you can do to change this? Maybe it's just opening up a conversation with somebody who normally when you see them, you might never talk to them. And I'll be honest, it can feel uncomfortable. And sometimes it's uncomfortable talking to strangers regardless. But I take the example of my daughter's daycare. She goes to a wonderful daycare. It's a very racially and ethnically diverse daycare, which I really love. And that's just not on the part of the caregivers, it's the families that go there as well. And, right now in her baby room, she has children that are, you know, children in the room that are not white. And I often see their parents coming in and are you so-and-so's mom? And how are you? And how old is so-and-so? And engaging in conversations to, you know, have a conversation with people. And again, having everything that we can do to ensure that others feel comfortable, especially when the other person may be in a situation of, you know, being the minority or being the outsider in the group of individuals who might be there. So again, just the small things that we can do to dismantle our unconscious bias. I also mentioned additional training opportunities, and I give kudos to the AVMA for really spearheading this. If you go to the AVMA training website, I will link to this as well. There are so many great webinars and training courses. There's the Brave Space Certificate Program, the Workplace Wellbeing Certificate Program, and there are free webinars as well. There's two webinars are on unconscious bias that are free for viewing. You get CE credit for them. You don't have to be an AVMA member to access them. So please take some time to reach out and do these opportunities. Take advantage. So what are the key takeaways from today? So once again, unconscious bias allows you to make instantaneous decisions that are often wrong without you even knowing it. This is what leads to snap judgments that can be harmful, not just in the veterinary workplace, but everywhere you go. So by raising awareness of our unconscious biases, we can slow down our decision-making and question our stereotypes or underlying reasons for our decisions. And this dismantling of our unconscious bias has the power to improve diversity and inclusion in our veterinary workplaces, and quite frankly, to improve well-being everywhere in our lives. So this is definitely an area that is worth looking at. Well, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed today's episode on uncovering unconscious bias as much as I did. I certainly learned a lot about my own unconscious biases in doing this research, and I felt really called to share this information with all of you. As for the resources from today's episode, I will go ahead and post links to all of the videos and programs that I mentioned. Please look for those in the show notes. If you have any other questions about this episode's content, or if you have suggestions for any future episodes, I welcome your messages. Please go ahead and send me an email at veterinarywellness@outlook.com. And of course, you can always learn more about me and the other programs that I offer by checking out my website, mariehollowaychuk.com. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.